Can we start now, David?
Okay, we have board time on Wednesday, the 20th of August.
Okay, Commissioners, Chris Cook has a couple of items she needs your approval to proceed with, so I'll turn the floor over to Chris.
Thanks, Mark. Commissioners, I would like first to ask your authority to continue to provide a defense to Krause and Davidson in the Spencer case, although they initially lost in a jury trial. The judge has overturned the jury verdict as not being authorized by law. We expect that Spencer will file an appeal of that judgment, and the county is therefore required to and should provide a defense to them.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept our prosecuting attorney's recommendation and provide for the defense of these two individuals.
I would second that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. We move and second that we continue in the defense of and our ex-employee's Spencer case. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
All right.
Thank you. In addition, I would ask that the county and, this is not part of the ask, the county and its partners in an appeal of LaCenter's decisions to change their comp plan to allow sewer to be extended to the Cowlitz property. The county and its partners in that appeal won. The Growth Management Hearings Board issued a decision in our favor, and we anticipate that there will be some continued appellate needs after the decision. Our partners and who are represented by Perkins Coie will file a motion for reconsideration very likely. In addition, we fully anticipate that the city and the Cowlitz tribe will file an appeal of the Growth Board's decision. I would like your authorization for the prosecutor's office to continue to respond to appeals that are filed and other post-decision matters to continue to represent the county in this litigation.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept prosecuting attorney's advice to uphold our county-wide planning policies and continue to represent and defend the county in this matter.
You want a second?
No.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? So what this is about, it's about keeping us in compliance with the urban growth boundary, mm-hmm. recognizing that we're preserving ag land. Mm-hmm. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Opposed.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, motion carried.
Thank you.
Okay, you should have, Commissioner, you should have the minutes.
Yes.
23 July.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve both sets of minutes.
And 6 August.
For 23 July and the 6th of August.
I would second that.
We move and second that we accept the minutes of the last two meetings. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any questions? Got it done.
Okay, that's pretty simple. All right, now we're talking about fireworks now because
I've been requested that we do fireworks next.
Yes, Commissioners, I appreciate that. Does
the board have all?
I did put them on the board. Shares and does. I'm not sure where they're going.
Is that where that come from? I just threw that away.
Much appreciated. So I don't want you to have to read this in board time. That wasn't the intention. But the community planning staff and I and Holly. I guess it was the last week before, we sat through a demo with Peak Democracy. That's this, the company that's going to come in and help us out with the survey tool and community planning. Other departments will be able to use it. We can use it for other issues. And we had decided a while back to use maybe the fireworks issue to dig a little bit deeper than the advisory vote did on how people are feeling about whether or not we go forward with changing our amending our ordinance and how we do that. So what we came up with here is just a first cut draft throw kind of the issue out on the front page, follow that up with what you can see there is 8 questions. Like I said, we wanted to show it to you all. You guys can take the next week. What we were thinking is if you get us changes back by next Wednesday, we could arguably go live with this maybe by next Friday. You'll see there we've got some draft language to cut it off at the end of September and then kind of tally the results, but yeah. It's totally up to you all what you want to do.
I have some feedback.
Okay.
I know that early on I supported the idea of having this online survey. Since then, I have changed my position. Because I am more aware now that this is not like an election. Election provides, there's a level of credibility that limits each person to one vote. And I've seen, and I understand that there is no such measures here. This is really a contest as to who can find the most number of ways to vote and to skew the results according to how clever they are. And so I no longer support this method. Instead, what I support is that we would act to put this on schedule a hearing that would leave the number, the sale times and dates exactly as they are, and to restrict the usage date to July 4th, just like the when it comes to usage date, that we would match the city of Vancouver.
What I was looking for was the information that you got for us before, Axel. I think I found it here.
It's there.
There's a chart on the front of
the dates of sale.
Oh, it's right here.
Should be right on the front of that. It's kind of small, though.
It looks
right
different
there.
Than what you gave us before.
Yeah, I have
that. I was looking at that.
Yeah, it's formatted differently.
Discharge times.
I have what you're looking for here, Tom.
It basically says the same thing.
It's right there.
It says the same thing.
So
it's
where,
the color.
Yes. But where I was going with that is that... so you're asking, what you're suggesting is not to change the time of sale.
Right.
But to standardized with majority of the rest of the community to the day of discharge of July 4th.
Well, there's a mix when it comes to the July 4th. I know that the people voted, and the people don't mind when they're sold because that doesn't make any noise. What they mind is when people set them off. Mm-hmm. And the city of Vancouver, being the largest jurisdiction within our county, limits the time to 4th of July. And that I would suggest that we just simply go with that. In fact, I can turn that into a motion if you want. And the reason being that why would we not restrict the times of sale is because we've already had a work session on this.
Mm-hmm.
And virtually everyone that has contacted us, has shared with us, who are use this both as revenue generation for the nonprofits as well as business, pro-business, business-friendly, they've already communicated to us that this would be harmful to them, and we would be harming them directly if we were to restrict the sales. That's one reason. The other reason is if we were to restrict it to the point, if we limit the time that they can sell, then we end up making it not worth it for those businesses and those nonprofits to set up, have all that overhead, and sell, and so likely we would restrict that. We would curtail that revenue generation for those nonprofits and those businesses. And it would also have another undesirable side effect, and that would be that we would likely drive more business to the tribes, which don't have such restrictions, and you'd end up with more illegal fireworks that are more damaging throughout our county. And at least this will allow safe and sane fireworks to be sold so that we... But there is some kind of a legal limitations of what can be sold.
So the sell time would remain the same starting June 28th.
It would be non-changed. Yep, unchanged from what it is now.
Ed, you had something you wanted to comment? Yeah,
well, I don't have a problem, but I want to add a couple things to the survey that Axel's.
Go ahead.
Well, I think, you know, at the end of 4th of July, people always have fireworks left over. On January 1st, New Year's Day, everybody usually sets off their leftover fireworks. So I put in here, do you approve of New Year's fireworks on that day, yes or no? Discharge fireworks on the 4th only, yes or no, which what David's saying.
You know, you have a good point. In fact, looking at this chart right
keep
here.
The fire, yeah, keep, right, I did. And keep here, the fireworks yeah. the same. So, the same that David talked about from the 28th.
You don't want to include December 31st, January 1st?
Yeah, through the New Year's. The New Year's.
Yeah, New Year. Yeah,
right.
To include it.
Right, yeah.
Well, he wants to add it to the survey to see.
Right, right.
But
right.
Commissioner Medora is now suggesting that we don't do the survey. So what's the board opinion on that as a board?
No, I think he's in there.
I think personally, if we have this company that you were talking about hiring, I don't see it's not going out to a book like David's talking about. Yeah. It's going to be surveyed online.
Yeah, we've contracted with them. We now have, we have the service them. Available. Right. And so, does the board want to use it or not?
Anything to do that, David.
Yeah, if we have the reason that we have a hearing is that individuals can come speak their mind, and we can see that is one person. They're speaking for themselves. We know their identity. An online survey can be skewed to be viruses go out and they do hundreds or thousands of votes on things automatically. Mm-hmm. And it looks like they're all individual IP addresses. So I understand how the system can be gamed. And to me, if we certainly have a hearing to invite the public to share, and we can consider whether or not the New Year's celebration should be included, we can listen, but that process has much more credibility than it would be to have an online survey.
But if you have, Mr. Chairman, if you have three people or four people show up at a public hearing, are they representing?
No.
No, they're
not. It's not an election.
Right. Well, it may not be an election, but it is not just like the fireworks, the marijuana, the East County Bridge, all these other things, David, that you're putting stuff up for, and me, I think the more people, there's always going to be people who are going to cheat on whether there's no tolls, whether there's no light rail. I mean, people figure out a way to do all that, but I think the more people that you can get involved in it, and the survey is going to come back to the commissioners first, and you're going to look at it, and you don't necessarily have to tell the people in the public hearing what the survey come out, so you take their
public record
advice, and then you compile the two of them together.
My first experience with that being skewed was with our vineyards, some of the wine tasting. And when you started looking down at the times, it actually shows the time that they vote. They all voted at the same time.
Yeah,
well. So it really skewed the survey. But I still support the idea of standardizing, doing the best we can to be the same as our incorporated areas. Mm-hmm. And Ed, I think you bring something up. I wouldn't promote the sale for New Year's. But
no, you're just using the excess fireworks that you got on
the board. I would accept the fireworks on New Year's.
If I look at... Yeah, go ahead, then.
So, you're about to make an amendment. I was going to ask if you'd accept the friendly amendment to your amendment.
Actually, I didn't make a motion yet, but I understand where you're going there. So, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I move that we schedule a public hearing to address this and the modifications to our fireworks policy would leave the sale times unchanged, and it would restrict the discharge times to be the same as, well, it would be July 4 only and New Year's celebration, which is
New Year's
Eve celebration, which is, looks like, I would say I'll pick one here, which is represented by the city of of Camas and Washougal and Battleground.
I would second that.
Okay.
The move and second that we standardize or alter our fireworks to remain the same for the sale and restrict the sales for the 4th of July and New Year's.
Yes.
Can you further discuss?
Yes. I understand that some will say, well, why don't you do just exactly what the people voted to do? And I would say this. We asked two questions on one ballot measure, and we did not allow the people to speak to address these two very different issues.
None of the above.
Yeah, because we had two in one, and our solution to that is to find the balance, which is to be pro-business, nonprofit friendly, and to hit the nail on the head, which is the discharge, which is where people are offended.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Further discussion? Yes,
well, this is a website of the contractor that developed the software at Open Town Hall. Mm-hmm. And they have software that authenticates every person who comes to the site to vote or to answer the survey. Mm-hmm. And so you can't have somebody repeatedly
ten times,
or have a bot come in and just do it.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I understand that, and I understand also how the system can be gamed, and it can look like all these residents is coming from valid addresses within our county. The system can be gamed, and this can help to minimize that. But in the case where people have passion this way and that way and motivation, I know it's possible to game the system, and I don't want to open that door on this.
Well, it wouldn't benefit us to be more restrictive because it would still go forth. But if we standardize with all of our communities, maybe we could address it later down the way as a community.
So we plan to use this tool to get input on the comp plan update and a variety of other subjects. So you would object to using it for that?
Well, you may not need to.
That's a broader discussion that I don't want to get into at this point. I want to stay focused on the fireworks. For this this topic, I don't believe it's appropriate. For the other topic, I'd like to be able to talk with you one-on-one to possibly take additional measures with GIS in order to take one more step of security.
Okay.
David, you know, you use your Facebook or your website or whatever it is. Everybody got them. So if you put on your website this afternoon what the board has just done, and you have 50 people come gaming the system, whether they game it in a commission meeting or whether they game it on a survey like that, I can call and get all hold of all my friends, and they can come down here and speak against the proposal we made to keep fireworks 365 days out of the year. So, I mean, I still think that it's important to know what everybody in Clark County thinks, every part of the county thinks. And if you have five people show up that says they're for whatever we agree to, there's five people show up say they're opposed, you got a 50-50 draw, so which direction you go in? I mean, it's...
And with that, what I'm looking for, when I see people come into this hearing room, I'm very aware that is not an election, and that is not representative of the people out there. Instead, what I am looking for are compelling arguments that we haven't already considered.
So one of the things I look at is that if we cut out fireworks completely, the only thing we would do is remove food from the North County Food Bank, for example, Shalachie Prairie Railroad, for example, yep, or other organizations that have their annual fundraiser to support them throughout the year. If we did that, it wouldn't change anything other than it would take those nonprofit organizations out of the fold. So until we do something as a countywide, I wouldn't want to be more restrictive, and that's what's before us.
And the other comments that would make, to go back to David's comments, if the Indian tribes are going to do what they're going to do, I don't think we should base every decision in Clark County on what the Callis Indians or what the Mohegans or whatever the rest of them are going to do. We need to base it on what's the best for the community and not keep aiming at the tribals because they have a different situation as
all right.
What we have. So.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Now, that was for the public hearing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't yet heard whether to proceed with the survey. I've heard don't do it.
I would say don't do it because.
But I got to hear from the other two. I mean.
Yeah, I don't see the need to do it at this time because we've made that decision, and I don't think we're going to change our decision until the other five major communities, incorporated areas, change theirs.
And
why would the rural area be more restrictive than the urban area?
And this is really a process to change an ordinance, and that has a high bar that needs to be reached. And the only way to objectively understand how the community, what the citizens, the majority of the citizens want, is to break this down into a two-part advisory vote. And this does not rise to that level. Because people have already spoken. All of the individuals that have spoken have clearly stated it's not the sale of fireworks that bothers them because that's a silent process.
Yeah.
It's in the discharge.
But this isn't a vote that's going out to the public per se on a ballot.
Mm-mm.
It's a survey that we're conducting here.
No, it's.
It's an online survey that we're doing. It's different than putting a ballot measure like the East County Bridge and that, where people are going to vote on this.
I trust elections.
But so the problem I have with the survey is that it would cost us money to go do it.
It wouldn't. We've already bought the product.
It's free.
And we get as many surveys as we want for the price we paid up front.
So if we do the survey, do you believe we're going to take action to change what we've made?
It's another source of information, that's all.
Which to me should it could skew the results, because suppose we end up with some obvious outcome regardless of what it is, then the argument would be, why didn't you just follow that? And my answer is, because that doesn't represent individual citizens that are known. It is not an election, and we don't govern by people's cleverness to be able to skew a web-based system.
So, Mark, we've already paid for this, and
we bought it.
So we can go out on other issues.
Yep.
And no charge.
There are 1,613 different forums that this company has put together for various governments around the U.S. 216,325 participants have responded to these forums. Answered questions, provided input, commented, debated back and forth online. So there are communities around the country that believe this is a valuable product, and when we saw it, we did as well.
That's what we first talked about here two weeks ago.
And it can be with the right checks and balances and verifications.
Okay. I'm in favor of what they're opposed to.
I mean, I will call them, and I will find out what technology they use to verify that each individual only comments once.
I would rather not leave it hanging. I'd like to be decisive on this. So, Mr. Chairman, I move that we do not incorporate or do not use the online survey system because it can be gamed.
Okay, yeah. I hate to make a decision and then go back and take a survey on the decision we just made. So I'm going to stay with our decision and not go back for the survey.
So is that a second?
Yeah, it's dead.
Okay.
Forget it.
All in favor?
I already voted.
Aye,
aye. Okay. And that was my only call.
Just for the minutes.
Axel's going to talk about official salaries.
You'll recognize this documentation. Please ignore the dates and the names. They don't match who's even currently on the board, so I apologize for that. But this is an old version of what was being put together by then-current County Administrator Bill Barron for the Position 3 salary. We need to adopt a salary for Position 3 because, as you know, it needs to be adopted before someone comes into term. And as you know, we will be electing someone in November to fill what is now Commissioner Mark Barnes as position three. So you guys had a brief discussion about it last time. You wanted to wait until Commissioner Barnes was back, because I brought it back forward today.
Yep.
If you turn to the second page, there's a table there. That's the simplest way to look at this. The underlined are what, well, if you go to 2015 and look at what's underlined, that is obviously what is proposed for position three, the bottom one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for some reason, it's underlined for your two positions, but those are actually in place right now and will run through 2016.
Mm-hmm.
You can see if you look, it typically goes up by $2,000 or in $2,000 increments. That is what it looks like, at least Bill was looking at for position three, except you'll notice it takes a pause for a year between 2015 and 16, because for whatever reason, position three, Commissioner Barnes' position currently is paid $2,000 more than position one and two. So from 15 to 16, his would hold at 106,224 until your two positions caught up to it in 2016, and then it would reassume the $2,000 increment going
mm-hmm.
forward, it looks like was was what was recommended. So,
so
that's where it is, and that's where the discussion was left.
Yep. So if I can jump in. What's not in question is position one and two salary. That's just simply used put on this paper for reference, and it would not be appropriate for us to even touch that, right?
That is, well, you two will get to a point to where you will need to, at some point, approve a salary for those 17, 18, 19, 20 years.
And that'll be some future time. We're not there.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
so
you can't amend it in term.
Right. So to stay focused here, the question is, what will the salary be for the incoming position three? And what I'd like to do is make a motion here that it would just simply be 80% of the amount from that's shown on position one and two and stay flat thereafter.
So it would always be 80% of what position one and two.
It would just translate to 80% of 104,224 would make position three 83,379. I'll just round that off to $83,379. That's for 2015. For 2016, it would be 84,979. That would match my salary, and that would be, I think, ample for the full-time position for whoever comes in. We lead by example. So that's a motion.
No, Ed is supportive of the 53.
Ed wanted to reduce it to 53,
That's when the freeholder election passed. And
actually,
five members.
We could get ready for it right now.
Actually, I just want to make a point here
yeah.
in that, if you wanted to reduce your salary now, you can do so.
Yes.
When I came in, the county found a way to actually reduce the gross, so you could do that for your own salary and lead by example now to make it that.
But David, you know, everybody can't afford to have the type of money you got and to take your reduced wages the way you're taking it. There might be somebody coming in here that only has been making $30,000 a year that might end up in this job, or $40,000 a year. And to say that you're going to pay them lesser because you're making less money, that's a ridiculous argument. That's absolutely ridiculous.
I'm not making that argument. This is still, my argument is, my recommendation is $83,000,
right,
which is still $30,000 above the recommended $53,000 that the charter proposes. The charter proposes, or presumes, because I looked at the source of this, that it was to be a half-time position, a part-time position. So that's why they cut the salary in half. But then they removed the language in the final version, but left the half-time salary there.
At Tom's request.
No, he didn't really request
it. You give Tom too much credit. There are 15 freeholders that made that decision. This is not, I don't want to compare this to the freeholders. This assumes, and this only applies if the freeholder, if the charter doesn't pass. So this would be a fixed amount that would be defined for full-time work for an incoming commissioner, and I would continue to match that and follow that as well.
But then you're discriminating against that person versus Tom, because Tom is going to make the full salary. And that for 2 years, he's going to make it through 2016, he's going to make the amount of money that it calls for position one that he's in here, and his salary will continue to go up. You're not putting anything in here that would block his salary going above
$106,000. And we can't. That's not within our jurisdiction.
Well, so it's not within your jurisdiction.
Let me share with you what I've done.
Tell me my wages or whoever Pridemore's wage is going to be at 80%, the same as yours. Maybe he can't afford that.
Gene Stewart doesn't care how much she makes.
I'll bet.
When I got here, I froze my salary from the time I was here, saying all raises I would get, because at the time I wasn't given the alternative that you were able to get. So the first time I said, I think I started at $100,000. Or thereabouts. And so when my raise came about, I said, I'd like to reduce my salary. And so what happened is that by $2,000, so what happened is that I got a $2,000 a year raise, and I said, I'll just give it back. So they gave it to me, I paid taxes on it, then they took it back. That's what was going on with me. The following year I came back, I said, I'm not going to pay taxes on it, and then give it back to the county. I said, so I'll commit all my raises from here on to local 501c3. And I have held to that. And so today I give over $4,000 a year to local 501c3s. So that's how I got to where I am.
But you're not giving the new person, whoever it is, whether it's Jeannie Sturt or whether it's Greg Pridemore, to say the same thing. They should have the option to where they want it. Donate that money to 501c3, and that David is automatically cutting position number three, which is discriminatory for us.
Well, I think I was going to suggest something different, is that while technically we can't change what you make and what I make, because it's under contract at 102, I was going to suggest that we match ours as to what's under contract, and then 2017 make changes or go back to the 102.
Well, actually, I've been making an assumption here, and what I'd like to do is just leave, it's been unspoken, but I better speak it.
You're assuming that you live on 83,000.
Yes, I am. So let me finish off that motion, and that would ensure that all three commissioners would make that same rate in 2017 and 18, so that the goal here is that all three commissioners would be equal, they would all have the same rate, and they would be 80% of what's defined in 2015 and 2016 of position two. And that would be flat for all three commissioners in 2017 and 2018.
80% is based on 2016 or
2014? It's 80% of right now there are different numbers in 2015 and 2016, so you would just simply say 80% times whatever is in 2015 for position 2 and 80% for 2016 for position 2. And that would carry into 3, and then we would cross all three commissioners would then end up with that same rate, 84,979. Beginning in 2017.
Axel, that would ripple across the other electeds, would it not?
Yes.
Yeah, we're getting into some legal territory that I'm going to have to check on, but yes, it would. The other elected officials, to my knowledge, are tied directly to the commissioner's salary. So.
Not all, some.
Some, correct. Not the not the judges or the sheriff or the prosecuting.
The sheriff is.
What is that formula?
The sheriff is 100% of commissioner's
my recollection
auditor
is that it's
and treasurer.
90% of what the commissioner's salary is, something like that.
The
The sheriff's different, but then the other electeds like the clerk, auditor, assessor, treasurer are 95%.
Well, whatever it would be, it wouldn't change their salary until 2017 and 18, because I assume that their terms are already defined through 2016.
That's right. It would change it
to
new term.
It would change it in 2015.
Are we going to have a public hearing on this then, to where those other people's salaries are going to get cut? Eventually, can they have a right to come in before the commission and argue the point that what we're doing?
I would be really careful that we don't let this blow up into something much, much bigger than it is. All we are setting right now is what would affect the incoming commissioner and then all commissioners after 2017. That defines the road ahead for one elected office for now. And there's plenty of time between now and the year 2017 to consider and to have a hearing or whatever we want to be able to do in a way that would affect the other electeds 2 years from now, 3 years from now.
Well, basically, David, you're discriminating, as far as I'm concerned, against a person in position three, because you can afford to take a 80% salary where most other people might not be able to do that. And I just think it's wrong that you should wait until the new person gets in here and let that person that's elected by the voters, whether it's Jeannie Stewart or whether it's Steve Greg Pridemore, then have your discussion about it, but also to find out how this is going to affect the treasurer, the auditor, the assessor, all these other people that are drawing wages at 90%. I think we're getting the cart before the horse.
Well, first of all, by law, we have to do it before November. Well, we do it before the incoming person comes.
And I think me personally, leave it alone.
It's not defined. We can't leave it alone. We have to define it.
We have to define it before November.
And not only that, for the same reason that Tom and I cannot adjust our salaries, law does not allow us to touch our own salaries other than to voluntarily reduce it.
But do you think it's all right to touch the salary of the person in the third position? David, I think you're wrong. I think it's just absolutely discriminatory in the worst way.
Well, let me ask you a question.
David, what I was going to suggest is that maybe we match it up to what our contracts are. Our contracts are 102 this year, 104 next year, and 106. You and I have elected to give back portions of our salary, even though we're under contract.
And a new person in three might probably do the same thing.
So it'd be something that in 2016 we would go back and make adjustments to our salaries at that time. But under contract now, I'm not really comfortable, even though I like Ed's idea of going with the freeholders, 53,000. I'm not comfortable dipping it down that far below our existing salaries, nor do I want to give back more than 4,000. I'm already giving back. That's 4,000 to local 501c3s that I give. I also give to others on the national level. So I would maybe more so recommend paralleling what we have. So it would start off at 104 instead of 106.
Well,
and then in 2017, we could go back and remove them back down to 102.
Let me make sure I understand. And I want to make sure that I understand, Commissioner Martins, your logic. You're supporting the charter. The charter cuts the salary to $53,000. But you consider reducing it to $83,000 is discriminatory. How's that work?
If the charter passes, the person's going to be a part-time person.
It doesn't say that.
I know what it says. I've read the thing several times. But basically, the voters have decided then, like you say, let the voters decide. Well, the voters are going to decide to cut the salaries to $53,000 and make them part-time and make an administrator the full-time, if it passes. I mean, it's going to go out there. I'm trying to give both sides the opportunity to come in before labor and express their opinion, whether no's or yeses and that. And so far, the no's haven't showed up to express that to labor. I think that whatever the voters is going to make a decision in November, that's different than what we're trying to do here by two commissioners or three commissioners or one commissioner passing, wanting to pass a motion to cut somebody's salary of 80% of what the current salary is, and only one position, position three. And everything else stays the same. And I commend Tom and you for cutting your salary or whatever you want to do. You have the right to do that as an individual. Give your money to a 501(c), whether it's Greg or Phoebe Stewart, whichever one it is. They probably will do the same thing. Maybe they won't do it. But it should be their choice and not us hamstringing them before they even get elected to public office. I just got a real serious problem with that.
We have a bit of a guideline already that's engraved in stone in yours and my contract that expires the 2016.
Yeah, I see that.
And I think that should be the baseline where we are.
Can I just address what you, two points you just made?
Mm-hmm.
One, it can't. The desire to make it their choice is a noble one, but it's not legal. That's impossible. When the person is already in office, it's fixed. So the decision has to be defined before they get into office. So it cannot be their choice. Agree?
No. I mean mine that way because when I went to give mine back, he said, I'm sorry, you can't do that. You have to accept your whole paycheck and then give it back.
No.
And that's how I got started. I didn't know until we were elected this last time. I didn't know the process that you did.
It's an available choice for us to reduce it now,
mm-hmm.
but the decision for position three must be defined before they take office. That's my point. And the other is that I want to understand the logic behind your reasoning, and that is that you believe that $53,000 is fully appropriate only because it's a half-time job. It's a part-time job. The new counselors will not be full-time.
If the voters say that that's the way it is, Davis, you always rely to go back to the voters. The voters voted on this, whether it's fireworks, whether it's marijuana, whether it's light rail, whether it's the tolls, whatever it is, and what I'm saying is the voters should make the choice and not have us sit in here 2 months before the election and cut somebody's salary in position three to 80% of what Tom's getting, and that when you're doing the same job, you're going to be doing the same job, spend the same amount of time here as you guys are, and you're going to say he's a second-class citizen when you have other staff people making more money than what the commissioner is.
Well, the voters are not they are not defining this as a part-time job. You are.
Phil, that's your opinion, my opinion.
The charter, it used to say that, they took out the language, and the answer was that if they want to work full-time, they can.
I think more importantly, we understand what all that is, and I don't have to understand Ed's philosophy of thinking, but I think that in parity, to be fair and keep it the same and not give the appearance of reducing the third position, I would like to keep it in step with ours, and that individual could choose to take his whole paycheck or give all but 80% back, or donate like I do to local 501(c)(3)s, but that would be their choice. But I wouldn't want to, for salary of record, I would like to standardize it. Our choice is to go back in 2017 and make those reductions. Assuming that the charter's not going to pass. I think the charter ended up being too radical. Even Ed agrees 53,000 isn't enough. And I can't imagine. I would love to see this a part-time job, but I don't see that. So.
Well, I'm glad it's not a part-time job. It is a full-time job if we're going to provide leadership and not just simply keep doing more status quo.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time to lead and to find smarter solutions and do government 2.0. That's full-time.
So we have a second shot at this in 2016 when our contracts are up, and we could recognize that today. So, for example, if our intent in 2017 would be to reduce ours to the 102, that would be roughly getting closer to your 80% of the original 106 that's scheduled for 2016. So what we would do today is make them the same for 2015, 2016, and in 2017, with the intent of bringing them all into standard again, we reduce them at that time to 102 instead of 108. So instead of 108, if you took 108 and took 80% of that, I think you'd be really close back to what I'm proposing or recommending at the 102 level there.
Well, I understand the intent there, but the argument then will be, well, then you got one commissioner that's making more, and we'd be cutting less for the others, and you end up with unevenness again. This is our opportunity.
No, we'd make them the same.
It'd all be the same.
We would make them all the same. And in 2017, the anticipation of direction we would do would be that third position would be 102 instead of 108.
We couldn't reduce the position three.
We would do it today. We draft the four-year contract pay scale today.
So what would you?
That's in position three's four-year term.
So what would be 2017 and 18?
2017 be 102.
You'd have the same review you're having now.
102 instead of the 108.
I see.
Or the 110. See, it used to be $1,000 jumps, and all of a sudden it changed to $2,000. And what happened is that when we froze our salaries for that 1 year, when we came back, instead of taking $1,000 bumps, we took $2,000 bumps. So we really didn't freeze our salary at all, did we? Gives that appearance.
Well,
so it would look like position number three would be 104,224. 106,224 for 2016. 102,224 for 2017. And 102 for 2018. In position number one and two, we would go back to 102 in 2017 and 102 in 2018. Then we would all be on the same level.
It would be the same as 2014.
It would be the same all the way.
I understand the intent there. We can only bring equity within the limits of the law. It would align. We can't touch yours, Tom.
I know.
I get that. But it would align.
I'm committed.
It would align position three to be equal to position two. I want to add also that this is not all that the compensation is there. There's already a $600 per month additional amount that's auto insurance going in that adds to that.
But see, that's a lot cheaper than having a vehicle furnished. We used to receive mileage on top of a car allowance, and we gave that back too. And we also gave back all mileages within the county. So when I live in North County and serve North County, I really took a hit. But that was important that we did that because we were piling on paychecks that wasn't being seen. So we went back to, say, car allowance, and then we established a car allowance within reason. It could be a little bit shy of having a car furnished and a credit card and driving on county.
I understand, but I'm just saying that there are additional benefits. There's retirement benefits. Yes.
The car allowance is there because we go to so many functions. Weekends, early in the mornings, Saturdays and Sundays, besides during the daytime, going to luncheons that we're expected to be at. That's where you
run like crazy.
But that's the reason for the car allowance versus having an issued automobile.
I understand. I'm just saying that. Just that. Yep, I got the reasoning behind it.
But it is. You're right. I see. it would be part of our salary, or it's a reimbursement. So that's the way I would look at my car. I'm actually being reimbursed a portion of what I'm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but my insurance alone, if I buy insurance, the price of gas, and a car payment.
Yeah.
So I think that's very reasonable.
Yes, but that adds $7,200 per year on top of this salary.
See, my salary is $102, and then my reimbursement for using my car, or you could buy me a new car every year. That's the alternative. So and this is actually cheaper by taking a car allowance.
Yeah.
It's a less hit on the...
We used to lease them, the local, we used to buy
them. That's one of the alternatives. For example, the sheriff.
Then we started paying mileage. We've done a whole lot of different things.
If you look at the sheriff's car, you never believe it.
I'd still like to make an appeal to make it less than that. I mean, the idea is that we are citizen representatives, and the vast majority of citizens that we represent don't make this kind of money. They're working full-time, too. And if 80-some thousand is too low... for this position, I want to argue for something significantly less than the 102 and the 106. What about 90,000? I'm trying to get it down so that it represents those citizens, so that we're not some kind of privileged class here, because we're getting retirement benefits, health benefits, car allowance in addition to this. And I don't want anybody to have for their their motivation to run for this office that they need the job and they need the money. I would rather have them run for this office because they believe in serving our community, and it's not for the money. The money is there to meet your needs, and it's not so low that you have to work a second job like the $53,000 half-time job, but it's sufficient to be able to meet the family needs so they can work full-time for the citizens. Well, so can you accept $90,000 flat?
Well, I can't. I wouldn't feel right if I was, my base salary was for 2015, my base salary and yours and my base salary is 104. And it's now shown 106 for the third, but it wouldn't be, it would be the same, it'd be 104, the base recognized salary.
Well, I'm looking at the cost of the taxpayers.
Yeah, we can't change yours and my salary, and where our contract gives us $2,000 increases every year. Only place we could change that is in 2017. Now I would go with you, and maybe we could all three agree that in 2017 that we go to 100,000 instead of 102. But I would hate to see anything lower than that, because you also talk about quality of a person. If you have a real talented person, and that talented person is used to making that kind of money, the incentive would be that he could come here, serve the people, and still make that kind of money.
Well, you know, Tom and David, I the public understands that if they're going to elect people to put into an office like this, just like an administrator, they're going to have to pay them some decent money. They don't expect the person to go to work for peanuts.
We want to talk about his wages,
right? Like peanuts, and that. And they don't expect them to use their car until the tires fall off of it.
Yeah.
And the oil grease job, oil trains, and insurance. I went through this for 34 years with the local and the building trades and that. And same type of arguments. You got to, pay the people a decent salary in that. But like I say again, the voters, if the voters don't agree that the freeholders should pass, David, they're not going to pass it. Nobody's going to get cut to $53,000. Nobody's going to get anything that's going to happen that's going to stay the same. So why would you take, if the voters say, no, we're going to leave it the same way it is, why should you penalize the person that's going to get elected in November and cut their salary to 80% or 90%? When the other two commissioners are making...
The other two commissioners aren't making.
Well, they would. You're given, the only reason why you're not making is because you've decided, because of your wealth, to cut your wages and that. Give it to charities, whatever you're doing with it. Tom has decided to donate his to
501c.
Well, it is the point. The person that gets in here should have the right to make that decision afterwards. I agree with Tom. In 2017, then you can make that decision the right way, where everybody has a chance, whether you're here, whether Tom's here, or whether whoever's here, Jeannie Stewart or Pride Moore, or whoever else is running for public office. But I think to just do what you're trying to do,
we have to,
right.
Yeah, we have to do the third position now.
Right. I understand that, Tom, and that's why I say I agree with what you're saying, that we ought to just standardize it all to 102,000, whatever the 2014 salary is, and leave it go at that, and then whoever the new persons are in here, then go from there, Tom. I agree with that.
So could we all agree that you standardize for 15-16 and then go to 100,000 in 2017 and 18? Could we all agree on that? That's given up, because actually we're scheduled. We're scheduled in 2018 to be at 210,000.
Right.
So you're giving up $10,000. And that would be the 80% that you're aiming at. But we can't do anything here in fairness. Sure, I say I give back all my raises, but I'm not engraved in stone. I could change my mind tomorrow or sign a contract today. I'm not sure.
Well, it really, what we're looking at here is cost to taxpayers. So we're not... It costs the taxpayers. What we do with our money is up to us, whether we give it to a nonprofit or keep it or whatever. The cost to taxpayers would be the gross amount that we would be receiving. I just want to voice that I think it's more than it needs to be, in that we need to lead by example as we represent the majority of the citizens in our community that don't make anywhere near this amount of money, and a lot of them work really hard running their own business or raising their own family. I would like to see it be less than 100,000.
David just said he doesn't work very hard. You don't work very hard. You're making too much.
Yeah, no, he doesn't work as hard as you and me, because he's taking less.
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that there are a lot of people out there in our community that work really hard. We also work really hard, but they're making less than we are.
But I've never seen, all the commission meetings I've been to, I've never seen one person ever come into a commission meeting and say that the county commissioners are making way too much money.
Oh, yeah.
We need to cut them down to 80% of their salary.
You haven't listened to Margaret tweet.
Oh, yeah. she tweets all the time.
Let me make
one last appeal. Can you reduce it anymore? Because I want to be able to be in agreement.
For 2017?
Well, I would break it down into, we got three sections here. 14, 15, I mean, no, I'm sorry, 15, 16,
I'll use our policeman for an example. If you have a sheriff making one salary and a city policeman making another and the state patrolman making less, what happens is that the state trains the state patrolman. And after he gets his certificate, he comes down and goes to work for the city, because the city's going to pay more. So you get that quality of person. And I wouldn't want to get just a run-of-the-mill, even though I believe in a citizen legislature. I can appreciate being in the legislature with fishermen and doctors and truck drivers and clergy and...
Electricians,
and teachers and the policemen, they were all there, and some people were commercial real estate owners, so it's a real gamut. But I also would like to keep our close to other commissioner positions around the state. I think Yakima and Spokane are very, very comparable to where we are, and today I think we make the same or a little bit more than Spokane, and Spokane's larger. But in what I'm recommending, it would make us a little bit less than Spokane, because Spokane is going to still be getting raises, Yakima is still going to be getting raises, Pierce is going to still get raises, and we're going to come up here and bump ours back 10,000.
Here's an idea. But first, our rate here does not in any way affect the police officer, the sheriff officer. That's all determined by union contract.
Oh, you're right. It only affects the sheriff.
Here's an idea. Rather than make this decision today, why don't we at least look at the other counties commissioners that are working full-time and somehow the bottom half of Washington, including Spokane, and look at what that is, and we'll take the lowest number of what that average is.
Okay, Spokane County's 93.
Well, let's do this. I understand we can try to figure that out now, but this is an important decision, and we need some more reference points in order to make it an informed choice. Let's do some homework, and we'll do some other comparables, because I think it needs to be more representative of who we represent.
Yeah. When you look at it in different ways, it's actually only a 2% raise every year that we've been getting.
A lot of our citizens would like to be able to make this kind of money.
Which is far less than what we give collective bargaining units. Collective bargaining units are getting 2.5 plus a step. So they're getting 4.5% increases a year, and we're still cutting ourselves off at 2.
I look at what the city of Vancouver did, and they gave this huge raise to their city manager. And what did that trigger? That triggered all the other employees being discontent because they got their raise and they didn't get theirs, and now they're...
That's true.
And so that is sabotaging that city, and they're going to have to raise taxes and cut services to make up for that blunder.
I would suggest, Mr. Chairman, David already did, but I would suggest that we get maybe the top... Look at the 10 counties, similar commissions and that, and take those wages.
Keep King County out of it.
See if we can get their scales also.
What their scales are and what their benefits are and what their kickbacks are for their automobile expenses. And come back in a week and
do some homework, get some reference points.
Right. One more time.
Be more informed. Yeah. Okay. And maybe do your report. Maybe you do your online survey for that.
It'd just be they would just be game.
Look across the table. Hey. Mark, look
across
the table.
Which way they want to game it?
Axel left. He's got one guy left.
Yeah. That's your task. Bro. That's your task.
No, they say it runs downhill. Okay.
What do we got?
Do you have anything for Commissioner Report? Anything you want to share with us?
You did the traffic in? Oh, Commissioner's Report. Yes, I do. One item here.
He makes me go last.
Wrap up. You do wrap up.
Best for last, right?
Caboose. In order for the other two commissioners to look over the resolution that I...
I hear it coming.
You hear it coming. Okay. And both of you have a copy of this, and I think Mark has a copy of it, too. My thing is, I started working on this about October last year. The reason why I did is basically, again, about comments and people making accusations about people that have volunteered their time over the last 16 years on Columbia River Crossing. And this document is intended to basically say just exactly what the process has been and how long it's taken in each step in order to get where it's at. And there's a list of, and I don't know if the, I'll give this to Tyler. Tyler, you got, there's a copy of this, the press. But basically, this is a complete whereas on each step of the way as to what's happened. But the other thing that I did in this, it took me about almost 3.5 or 4 months in order to compile the list of all the people that have worked on this over the last 16 years. Every partner that is going to be necessary for anybody to build any kind of a bridge across...
Like an East County bridge?
Well, East-West bridge, county bridge. But most of them have not only their names in here, but it also has their email addresses and everything, which might help FIG Construction out or whoever the successful bidders are. But there's 500 plus people on here. And
you know what that brings to my head?
Huh?
Every one of them was drawn a salary, like Don Wagner, and they spent their time working on that. I think they had to pay back to the community their salary while they were sitting on that. Otherwise, they were being paid to sit there.
But this is an opportunity for this commission to say, regardless of where you stand, this is an opportunity to say to them, if you're talking about building bridges, David, this is an opportunity for you, for anybody that has seen the work that's went on, and the accusations have been made about the $200 million wasted or the boondoggle or whatever else it is.
I would never say that.
Right. You can look at the list of names on here of all these people that have participated in this thing, in churches, in neighborhood association people, in school buildings, at malls, everything where this has taken place. And there's nothing in this resolution that is derogatory towards anything. And I heard David say on Tuesday, we need to build people, a coalition of people working together in order to make this happen. And I'm saying to you, like I say, I started on this thing about October last year and have worked really hard in order to put this thing together and to compile a list so everybody can see just exactly who is involved in it. There's businesses from both Oregon and Washington. There's all kinds of regional councils. There's different legislative people been involved in it. But it gives us, the county commissioners here, an opportunity to say to these people, just like you do when the people come in here, the employees come in here and you have the recognition that comes in here, or when Darwin Zimmerman does the appreciation thing for the veterans. What all I'm saying is that somebody needs for a change is to say, we want to thank these people for their effort over the last 15 years and that. And it's nothing more than that. It's not. It doesn't make a political statement. It is just that it starts the groundwork, David, for you folks to be able to say, by passing this at the commission meeting and also maybe recommending that this go to the RTC board, which is both Oregon and Washington, the JPAC, which is both Oregon and Washington, and say, we want to see you people also thank all these workers, both in both states, that have participated in this process over the last 16 years start some goodwill towards getting the people to work towards, if you're going to get an East County bridge, or whether you're going to West County bridge, or whether you're not going to get any bridge, or whatever it's going to happen. It lists everybody in here, David, and most 90% of these people that are in here are going to be partners with you or Fig or whoever the successful bidder is if there's an East County bridge. So all I'm saying is I would hope that the commissioner, just like you did with your integrity agreement or integrity resolution or with the East County bridge resolution, the two of them, you folks would say, hey, we want to support this resolution. We want to start building some relationships in order to be able to accomplish what you want, mm-hmm. and that's more or less mm-hmm. just exactly what this is.
Okay. You said some really important things there.
Yep.
Building relationships.
Yep.
Building goodwill.
Yep.
Thanking people, however we disagreed with them.
Right.
Those are all positive things.
Right.
I support all of those things. And I would be willing to read through this and understand what it says, because the message that this is intended to send, we want to make sure that people who oppose this project that all of these individuals work so hard to do, they do not want to feel betrayed, that somehow we are thanking those that have refused to listen, those that have spent $200 million over the objection of our community, that somehow we're not thanking those people for that disservice. In their eyes, it's a disservice. But I understand also that this is so many people have put so much energy, so much money, so much time into this. And a lot of people have received a portion of that $200 million. I get that. There is a grieving process that happens when you have a death of a vision. And that grieving process includes thanking, and includes coming up for air and saying, now what? And that whatever it is, up to this point, our community is broken. These relationships are broken. We don't have goodwill. We have people acting in spite because of the sides that we took during this battle. And what if this is a means to build a new bridge, I mean bridge of relationships, then I think we ought to seriously consider that. Since you are the author of this, maybe that work isn't quite finished. Maybe you can add something to that that would build on that goodwill, that would somehow encourage those that still carry a animosity and that kind of a grudge against those that didn't, that weren't part of this camp. Maybe that message, you can include that message too, that would encourage them to forgive, to embrace and listen to our community first, because there certainly are some lessons for this. We know how not to attempt a project now. And it would be so wise for us to be able to identify what did we learn and how can we move forward so that we end up with, so that we can all get on board. Ed, you represent a segment of our community that I can never reach. And that's really important for us to have a really good and trusting and respectful relationship. So I never want to send you any message that says I'm not willing to do something that's going to build goodwill in you. So I'm willing to look at this, but I would consider also between now and next week, please consider if there's some other message you want to include in this that would help somehow encourage those that are still in one camp to consider coming up for air and looking for the good of the community and embrace us all. Because I don't believe that we have much hope in building any project without Ed Barnes and all those people that you represent also having goodwill and the leadership that you can provide, the influence that you can provide. I don't think without that, we won't be able to make progress. We'll continue to fight in that no, we all lose when that happens. So, yes, I embrace that, and I hope that you will consider adding a positive message for moving forward in a way that respects people and respects those that have so far been counted as adversaries.
Yeah. Well, my comments to that, David, is for the first 13 years, there was no Republicans, Democrats had no adversarial. Nobody even showed up at any of the public meetings that are listed in here. They never showed up to oppose anything or say, I know when you showed up, Tom. In fact, I got copies of most of the minutes. But the people that never showed up for 13 years, there was no opposition until no light rail, no tolls. And that's when all the bad vibes started being played out. And that was about a 2-year period or a 3-year period, maybe I'd say 2-year period of time, where that got wrapped up in an election for mayor. It got wrapped up in an election for county commissioner. But it has nothing to do with the amount of time that all these individuals spent trying to do what they thought was right for the community, for economic development, to build jobs, to build, including the major business people that are here, whether it's Fred Meyers, whether it's Intel, whether it's Boeing, whether it's SCH America, WaferTech, you can name all the ports between the ports. Now, there was none of these bad vibes that were out there until the toll situation, the light rail situation started happening. So the people that worked on this thing over all this, over the first 13, maybe 13 and a half years, none of this took place. There was nobody got up at any of these public meetings when they were talking with the commissioners. When I was still a commissioner, we had public meetings at the Key. Nobody walked in there and said, I'm opposed, in a poor set of tennis shoes or that, walked in there and said, I'm opposed to tolls on the bridge, I can't afford to pay them. Nobody did that. The people that showed up was the ones that were driving their Lexus cars or had their Nike tennis shoes on or their three-piece suits like we're dressed up here today and that. Mm-hmm. So I agree that there's probably some things that's been said in the last maybe 3 years that has maybe hurt some people. But I even remember some of the people that are currently opposed to Columbia River Crossing that said if it didn't have light rail on it, that they would support it. They'd even support bus rapid transit on the bridge. And then, you know, things just keep going a little bit further, and of course the legislative process hasn't worked the situation out very well. But read this over, and I'll try to add a little thing to it. And
I would appreciate that. Yeah. And the influence that you have, you know, it's very, very significant.
Yeah.
And whatever you say, and what attitude that you project regarding other representatives of the people, it would be really good if you also would lead in that and somehow take those that you count as your adversaries because of past disagreements, and don't speak ill of them anymore. That would include Don Benton, Ann Rivers, Liz Pike, because we all have to work together. We all lose when we have some kind of malice or grudge toward each other. It would be so good, because positive attitudes are contagious, and so are negative ones.
But they're not the one that's going to have to adopt this.
No, but hopefully if we build something together, all of these jurisdictions are going to have to work together with goodwill.
And they're all here. All the legislative processes here. That's what I'm asking you
but
to look at.
That only represents a part of the political spectrum. Right. In order for us to move forward, we need a whole political spectrum there that includes R's and D's, yeah. Left and right,
well, there's a lot of D's
union
dollars.
And private sector.
There's a lot of them on here.
Yes. And we want
to. And it gives you a list to work from to give this to figure.
And
them.
It gives us a list to work from.
Okay.
Yes.
I know the list was short. I didn't get listed. I didn't get listed. I didn't get listed as a legislator.
Huh?
I know if I didn't get listed as a legislator on the legislative list. And I was part of it. So anyway, just kidding.
Okay, thank you for
so,
that.
Okay. Rory, I know it's kind of an example of our community coming, you know, volunteers, working, how hard they work. It's amazing. I think part of the problem was it wasn't until the last 2 or 3 years that I learned of the 6 capital projects in Oregon that was going to be built. As close as I was to everything here, I bet you that the majority of the volunteers that were supporting it were not aware of the 6 capital projects being built in Oregon and charged to the bridge project.
Oh yeah, they were, Tom. We discussed every one, and we discussed the rebuilding of the steel bridge. And the reason why we didn't build a maintenance shop over here, to set up a maintenance shop for just the cars that are running over here, when we could use Ruby Junction, which already had all the equipment. We had to buy all that special equipment and stuff. I mean, every one of them were brought up, every issue were brought up about the building that would be housed, the toll collecting and
not
the whole.
Until the last 3 years.
It was. It was brought up, Tom,
yeah, but
from day one.
As close as I was to it. As close as I was to it. Best kept secret.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so I'd like to see this get on the agenda as quick as it can.
Did you give me a copy?
Huh?
Did you already hand me a copy?
The resolution?
Yeah.
Oh, I gave it to you. Here. I gave it to Anna.
Your boss has it.
You weren't here. You'd already got it today.
I have no excuse.
You got another
now.
One. I said, yeah, this
I
is
have
board
it twice.
Time tomorrow.
You
make sure it's in his board time
more. Pack. I do. Thank you.
And that's been revised about 10 times.
Anything else, Ed, on your agenda?
Let's see. What was it? Basically some of the same stuff we've already discussed today. So.
All right. David?
I'm good.
Good. Anything you want to bring up? Anything you want to share? Anything that we've been working
There's
on?
There's 3 things I can share with you. Constituent Rod Edwards that called in last week had a problem with. He has a mixed-use development that he's been in process for a couple of years. He's had the Community Development Department provide a review for him of his plans. He's getting close to submitting and building application. He was concerned about qualifying under the current fee waiver program, and his initial feedback from the Community Development Department was that he did not qualify, so he contacted our office. Marty Snell and several of his staff reviewed that specifically, and we were just able to give back to Ron Edwards and affirm that he would be able to qualify for that, to pull the application and submit the free waiver application with.
And that's because he hadn't
permit.
Really provided an application yet.
Correct.
So he's
Marty's applying. Feedback to me, you know, mm-hmm. I wish he was here to answer for himself, but he said what he had gone through was he had paid for his department to review his plans, and he had paid for that fee, and so when he comes in and applies for a building permit, he can submit
that's
his waiver for the mm-hmm.
yeah, that's
that,
the trigger.
That's the actual trigger.
And that's this
and that's
policy, you can't make exceptions.
That's
now.
Why he qualifies now yeah. within that
yeah.
window.
And
that, that was kind of a misunderstanding before because he had applied for that review before the yeah. current fee
and
waiver program.
So we kind of put it back in his ball field by saying, you want to start over, you can, and then you qualify under the
no.
plan.
No, he's not
so
far
than
he
that
never
now.
Applied.
So
no, the event to trigger the fee waiver hadn't occurred yet.
Right. We found out the building, he had not previously applied for a building permit. He had the community development go
okay.
through the
yeah.
review process, and he had paid for them to review his
yeah.
development plan.
Okay.
So this
but
does
that
not
was not the trigger.
Change any it history. It doesn't
does
backdate anything.
It doesn't create a new door that people can go through.
How many jobs is he going to make?
I don't exactly have that number. He had a mixed-use development, so he had a
well,
significant amount of commercial
that
would qualify for
business. I mean, if it wasn't business, it wouldn't qualify.
Not at all.
So business only creates jobs. That's
yes.
all it does.
Yeah.
Right? Residential doesn't do that.
So another issue that I reviewed for the commissioners this week was there was some language that was brought to our attention in the park permitting process that appears to indicate to a concerned citizen that we require permits based on a religious activity going on in our park. It says here that, you know, events requiring a permit include baptisms and weddings. I contacted Bill in our parks department through Heath Henderson. He clarified that it is not the activity that we are permitting. It is actually when it is a large group that they are planning on having there. And he believes we should address that, and he'll look at revising that so it doesn't mislead somebody to indicate that we're permitting the religious activity.
Yeah, it's based on size.
Here's what I understand about this.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody can use the park for anything they want anytime, mm-hmm. there's no cost. If they want to reserve the park
mm-hmm.
for their use
only.
So that mm-hmm. only, then they pay a fee. Regardless of what that use is, and we just if somehow we are specifying the use of it for this or that,
mm-hmm.
and we're not clarifying that this is they're paying, we only charge for exclusiveness,
mm-hmm.
regardless of what the activity is. If we don't communicate that, then it sounds like we need to be able to change
right.
our communication.
Well, we have a special fee schedule on the internet at the parks reservation site, and it doesn't refer to these examples. It just says if you have an event. You want to reserve a shelter for an event, and you have this many people coming. This is the fee. If
yeah.
you have this many people
yeah.
coming,
but it's
yeah.
this it's this language that is misleading the
yes.
person before they even get into that.
So this language is somewhere.
This language, if
yeah.
you Google
so.
Clark County permit,
so we
permits,
do have this language somewhere.
This is from our.
Oh well, then.
So he's going to look at revising this so it's clear that it's not
good.
The activity
good.
That we are
yeah.
permitting.
Certainly,
it will be the large groups that...
Actually, no,
permitting.
It's not even that. You can have as many large groups there as you want. There's
mm-hmm.
no cost for any large group. The only thing that people are paying for is exclusive use of an area.
Well,
if it doesn't say that, we need to somehow update that, and it sounds like you're on track to
he's
do so.
He's working on revising that language.
We did run into a parking problem. And thankfully, our ambassadors helped with the parking because you had to start stacking cars. So you had one group of 80 people in one area, and so the parking became an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when we go back and we talk about size. We might have to consider size or have them go park someplace else, and they're going to have to walk to their event.
Well, that's one of the reasons why we allow... parties, when I say parties,
mm-hmm.
be in groups to be able to reserve an area
mm-hmm.
because then it solves the problem of having all the general public there plus
mm-hmm.
a large group that it competes for the same space when they could have resolved that by just simply setting aside that space for that extra special event. So especially if they're going to pay, then they have access.
So
they have first priority.
We might look. No, we have different areas down there.
So the permitting process works. It helps them coordinate so they don't impact other groups that are meeting there, and everybody gets to enjoy the park.
Well, good find, Peter. And so certainly support the
work
idea
in progress. The other work in progress you have me working on, this is a map of a lot out in the Walnut Grove area, currently owned by our Department of Environmental Services as a wetlands buffer.
Correct.
And well, or a stormwater buffer. And we found that we're only using half of the 7-acre parcel for that purpose, and there is nothing that requires it to be fenced off and not used by the public.
It's currently fenced.
I'm going to be working. I have an appointment with Bill in our Parks Department next week to discuss this and see if we can utilize this as a park.
7 acres. Isn't that awesome?
And it's surrounded by residential areas.
And a potential acreage over here on the right side in green that's privately owned that we might be able to get donated. So we'll have maybe an 8-acre park right there where we need it. So.
Yep. Unless there's some water hazards in there that would be a drowning problem for children.
Nope, there's none.
Then the integration of environmental, any kind of environmental resource with parks and all that, we're moving in the right direction when we open it up so that it becomes an accessible nature area for the public, because that's one of the nicest things about parks is that that's just what that is. To fence people out of that is counterproductive. So I think what this represents is the old way of creating silos and say that's only for stormwater. And this is only for park, and this is only for, and everybody loses because we don't have enough parks and we don't have enough access.
So what happens, David, if the stormwater swale in that is in a situation to where by allowing the kids to run down their people that they can damage the vegetation and stuff in there that helps the discharge?
You need to go look at
there's no
water there.
Yeah.
Well,
it's on. And go to 55th Street and 78th Avenue.
Okay. I know.
Commissioner, this is a stream bed that goes through here that's
seasonal,
vegetated.
Dry.
Then on both sides of that, there's a flattened buffer to buffer the stormwater is basically what it is. But it's a grassy area that's completely dry in the summer.
So this is an opportunity. That's a really good point that you just brought up, but an opportunity potentially to have the Park Advisory Board and the Clean Water Commission, which is also related to this, get together and see what they can do to form some kind of a best of both asset.
Yeah. We'll let them come up with a plan. We just want to get
great.
Them coordinated so
that, so
that they know that there's an opportunity here.
So you're on that.
I'm
to
on that.
Merge those boards together for this project. Great.
And those are the updates I have for you.
Thank you, Peter. Okay. Good work.
Do we have anything coming up on panhandling?
Chris Warren has revised the ordinance he's reviewing.
Okay.
He's taking some well-deserved vacation. So
it is well-deserved, all right.
He's
working all the time.
Guys,
we might have it next week.
We can press him when he gets back, see where he is in his review, and then hopefully have it at board time.
We're also waiting for his staff to come back with recommendations on a good gun ordinance.
On the what?
Gun ordinance.
There's still more work to be done on that.
Yeah.
And I had a conversation with Emily earlier, and it's still very much draft, but there's more work to be done behind the scenes, and I'm one of those people to be doing some of that work.
Okay.
I have to finish my homework with her.
All right. We are still interested. We started on that crisis center interventions, and we're up to about 21 now crisis interventions. And so Peter's going to do is take that information back to all those crisis centers and see how they can better work together. How they could somewhere, whether it be 911 as the distribution hub, but some way to make them work better, quicker, and be available 24 hours a day. So we're going to take it back to them and have them come back with recommendations how they can work together to be more effective.
Actually, there's potential.
Pretty awesome.
You've done homework on this. I haven't. So this is surface thinking here, just a brief introduction to it. I expect that because our times have changed. It used to be that you look into a thick phone book and say, let's see, what do I find a crisis help for this? Mm-hmm. And you would look up and find a unique crisis phone number. You would call that. That's no longer the case. We don't have phone books anymore. Not really. Like the Yellow Pages. They call 911. That's the hotline. And 911 then can direct it to the right resource if there's a specialist group or team to handle that. Mm-hmm. So the idea of having, it doesn't have to be crisis hotlines. They could just simply be resources that are traffic copped, distributed by Cresa potentially. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but that's, I think you may be onto
everything from
a potential
drug
improvement
and alcohol
in smarter, lower
to
cost, better system.
The sheriffs that I talk to, we bring them to the neighborhood association meetings all the time. They come there, and the people ask about the 911. And they say that's the most simplest way, but mm-hmm. maybe there's a way that you could still use the 911, but if they say what the call was, they could push this button and the call would transfer to somebody.
But that's what we're thinking. That's kind of what we're
transfer
thinking.
To
so immediately that other expert would come in.
Transfer rather than...
And I think that's what we're all imagining, mm-hmm. that there will be a specialist team here and there that for each kind of speciality, but it's the Cresa operator that directs into that team. It's not the Joe Public out there looking in a phone book to say, what's the phone number for that particular thing? They route everything through Cresa.
Well, and the thing of it is, you ask the sheriff's office for a sheriff's number, and they say, don't use that number. Use that number. Just call 911 for everything.
There used to be something like an 811 or something.
I know, 311.
211.
They are, actually. And several years ago, United Way funded a movement to try and coordinate this effort. And it's kind of in progress and ongoing, but they are trying to popularize the 211 number, and it basically is a non-emergency hotline to connect you to the diverse resources out there that are available for people. It's a non-emergency number. So they are trying to do that, and all our hotline contracts or with providers now require that they coordinate with that 211 and make sure they're people can contact them through that. So that is something that's ongoing and in progress.
And I'm assuming that right now that Cresa is tuned in to, if somebody may mm-hmm. not know about a 211, so they call Cresa mm-hmm. and they say, this is a non-emergency, but I need help.
Yes.
That Cresa would say, did you know that you can dial 211 directly? I'll connect you to the kind of help you need right now, but next time, remember, you can call 211. Mm-hmm. So that little bit of communication
and
progressive.
That's exactly what they're doing.
Oh, good.
You know,
for the non-emergency calls, 911 mm-hmm. still has resources that they refer to for immediate or not quite immediate emergency calls that they receive.
Oh, you remember that little card that we talked about when we were talking about the plasticized cards with the numbers on it to give to the panhandlers and that? Mm-hmm. The system would work the same way. If you put those numbers mm-hmm. on a card like that, that would get out to the public that you hand out to the... Anybody walks up here?
We were finding out in our surveys and research that the following day, the different agencies would contact 911 to see what calls came in.
Yes.
There's like a 7, 8, 12-hour span from the crisis to the follow-up. Yep. And that's what
we hope. So it sounds like there's a smarter way
prevent.
To do it, and you're on it.
Yeah.
Great.
So we've learned a lot more about the youth house and our contract. And I understand we are in about the second half of a 2-year renewal of our contract.
The second half starts in October.
Yes.
So, we're approaching that.
So, I'm hoping, because we've been working on this for a while, I'm hoping that within 10 months we will have a plan to either fill the Dolly Building with occupants or the youth house.
Okay.
So if we're lucky enough to get renters in there, so be it. But we haven't had very good luck for a couple of years.
Well, I remind you, though, that building is at 80%, and the average for the downtown is at 65%. So
mm-hmm.
even though we're not full, we're doing much better than average.
Yeah. But we have the prime. Those two prime, the one on the corner upstairs,
mm-hmm.
prime, right. Been vacant for 2 years.
Right.
And the other part in the back that we're looking at has been vacant.
But whatever we do with this, Mr. Chairman, I want to make sure that we don't do something that we're taking kids and dumping them in with adults where we end up having a serious conflict with that. So I agree with you. We need to look at it, but I don't want to do something with kids that are noisy. With
the good part is that the vacant parts are pretty much on one end.
Right. So.
And then we'd also have to do something by the security door.
Yeah.
And whatnot, but those things could be done. But we're spending a huge amount of money on an asset that doesn't belong to us, and in turn we have vacancies. Yeah. So that's what we hope to.
We got a little bit of time to discuss that.
Commissioner Dorr is correct. We are spending about $50,000 a year to rent the youth house.
I think their budget is 1.5, but we also have other partners in that we get grants. So
right.
Besides what we spend.
So our general fund portion of that rent is, it's only like half or so.
Yeah.
Kids with bands and horses and dogs and everything else like that, and they're in the second story of the building.
Have we gotten our
lab costs
for animal control?
One of the animal control techs has a Surface Pro 3 that they are taking out this week and are using in the performance of their duties. We have ordered, and that one belongs to IT. They loaned it to Paul so they could test it.
We have some ordered.
Paul has ordered 4, but right now we have somebody just working on it so that he can train the other 3 when the 4 units come in. So
awesome. We're going to get there. We're going to get there.
Yeah, and the Surface Pro 3 is in high demand, and so there's a backlog on deliveries.
We were going to work on this, and we didn't follow through with it. Remember the WASAC?
Right. Has everybody given their input?
I haven't. I'm still sitting on
mine.
I'm the only one.
Are you done? Knows on there?
Okay.
I think
then we can draft something.
Okay.
All right.
I was wondering what everybody else did with it. And that's all I have.
Okay.
So, Mr. Administrator?
Last thing here. Back to the gun policy thing. Meeting with Emily, there were a number of things that she did not have, very fundamental pieces of information that we need in order to be informed, and she's going to bring that back for us to be able to understand.
I would still like to see us do the survey of the county police.
We've kind of already done that.
I haven't seen it.
I can provide it.
It wasn't a formal survey. What we did is accepted input from people. We could put a Survey Monkey thing together pretty quickly.
One thing good about constitutional rights, they are not subject to survey.
That's right. Okay.
But in this environment, there is state law that gives us the right to preclude folks from bringing weapons into the workplace, so a survey might have a place.
We can skirt those constitutional rights. Same one here.
So we have a request for a work session to provide you an update on the traffic impact fee program. The city of Vancouver is going its own way next year, and so we have to develop our own TIF program, separate and distinct from theirs.
I think we talked about that in the work session, too, didn't we?
I don't remember.
We talked about the need to have a work session.
Yeah, right.
Because we were in the process of having fewer.
That's on the table for discussion, yes.
Yes.
And so, anyway.
So, sure, green light.
Yeah, so they want to do it on September 3rd, which is not too far out.
Oh, well, that's soon.
Okay, so we'll schedule that. 3 vacancy requests. Sarah Eckhart, who is our internet expert, who keeps our county website neat and tidy and makes all the changes that this fellow wants, has decided to leave the county, and I would like permission to hire a replacement.
Why don't you hand those out? And we'll talk.
Should be in here somewhere. Okay. As usual, they're given to you beforehand.
Okay.
Okay. So,
have you slowed down on your computer request?
Well, she's gone the first week of September, so after that,
you've got a need, don't ask.
At public expense. I'm typing away on my own here.
I would suggest that we allow the administrator to hire somebody.
Well, let's wait a week. We'll bring it back next week.
Right. She's gone the first couple of days in September, so we're going to have a gap there where changes are just not going to happen.
Is she the only person that does the?
She's our web content manager. Yeah.
But we still have IT people too
that don't do what she does.
Okay.
I would like people to know if you could bring a job description for every person in that small department, I'd like them to
be happy to
factor that in.
I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
Okay. Two from Public Works. One is to replace Don Andrews, who's retiring. He's a capital project manager, does road projects.
I'm good with that.
I have a question. What's the difference between a project manager and an engineer three?
They could be one of the same.
Well, yeah, he's an engineer. He's an engineer. This is...
That's what I'm thinking. They're both engineers.
Yeah, so. But they do different things. This is in transportation programming, and this is in construction. So this person works for Steve Schulte. This person works, for Tom Grange. So like Rob Klug, for example, he's an engineer. He's a traffic engineer.
He sure is.
So
he's a great engineer.
My concern is the number of projects that we have going on. I think we have quite a few going on right now.
We do, and we'll be accelerating.
Okay.
Build that infrastructure. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, this person is split between Schulte's side and Tom Granger's side.
So. Yeah. And I see that one's been vacant since March 3rd.
Getting two for the price of one.
As the project manager.
Yeah. Now, let me tell you what Heath Henderson...
I could be wrong.
Heath Henderson has been looking at the...
Engineer.
The three. Capital or the succession planning program that Pete Capel put together. And Pete was axing some talent, and he believes that some positions that were vacated and that were planned to stay vacant, he believes that we need to replace those people. So he's tweaking that succession planning document with a bunch of input from the senior management team. Mm-hmm. And so
I guess my point is that if we're short of money in our traffic division, then we probably shouldn't be engineering things that we're not building. If we're building those things and we do have money, then we probably should go ahead and build them. We're not short money.
No, let's get them impact fees back.
That's my point, is that if we're short impact fees, then...
Actually, impact fees are not, way so. Up.
Yes.
Well, they are.
Let's spend it on these projects.
Yeah. So I'm absolutely. Green light.
We already have the projects. We have the
road
money.
Fund.
These people
fund.
Will be fully
okay.
employed.
Build that infrastructure, right?
Yeah.
Right.
We don't have impact
build those
problems
funds.
Here.
Yeah. Okay.
We're on the same page there.
And the other one, we need another better understanding. That's one of the areas that we're looking at to better serve. So. Mm-hmm. And cross train. We always talk about cross training. So I don't know if we could do that here.
No.
Not in there.
I don't think so.
I think the cross training is working down in the auditor's office and the assessor's office and the treasurer's office.
If there's somebody that I have very
anything
good confidence,
else,
it's
no,
confidence in, it's Heath
no?
Anderson.
Yeah.
He knows how to manage. He
all
knows
right.
how to get stuff done.
Anything for the good of the order. Any do-overs?
Nope.
Thank you, everybody. Good.
Thank you.